in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit.
It's about finding a pathway forward.
News on News with Mark Latham.
The leader of One Nation in New South Wales. And Mark Latham joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you. And politically, it's been a long week, hasn't it? Especially if you're Anthony Albanese.
It has been a bad week for Anthony Albanese, hasn't it? Can I ask you, because I've had lots of people send me emails asking me to ask you this question, and I think you know what it's going to be, Mark. What was Pauline Hanson thinking with George Christensen?
Well, I think George is probably going to end up as the Senate leader, state leader for One Nation in Queensland. There'll be a Queensland election in the next 18 months, and George will probably line up for that. He can't win a Senate spot at number three on the ticket. So I think he's joined One Nation to have a practice run, number three on the Senate, and probably lead up the state effort. Queensland's unique in Australia. They only have the lower house in the state parliament, so you can't run for their legislative council. So he's probably going to be a state candidate for a seat around central Queensland and try and increase our numbers from one currently to something higher in the future.
People would like me to say, what was Pauline Hanson thinking? He doesn't appear to be. I mean, in his electorate, okay, he seems to be popular. But gee whiz, he's made some real stuff-ups in the last 12 months, has he not?
Well, Queensland's a bit different, isn't it? And central Queensland politics is a bit different again. George is seen as a character. He's not everyone's cup of tea. I know he made some controversial statements about COVID and vaccination, but, you know, he's left the National Party on the basis, probably not on those issues, but on their move to the net zero policy, the big job destroyer for the resource sector and manufacturing. So he's very disillusioned with the National Party, which has gone fairly woke, and he'll run in Queensland, and he won't win for the Senate, but we'll see how he goes for a state seat in the future, if that's where he ends up.
Talking about people who continually put their foot in their mouth, what's going to happen, you think, with Mr. Kelly? Is he just going to go quietly?
Craig Kelly?
Yeah, Craig Kelly.
Well, he's recontesting his seat of Hughes, and I wouldn't imagine he's got any chance of winning that seat there in southern Sydney. It adjoins the Prime Minister's seat of Cook, and Craig Kelly is up against Labor and Liberal, putting him last on the ballot paper, so I'm assuming he'll run third or fourth in that electorate and will lose badly. That's my assumption about Craig Kelly. I can't see him winning a lower house seat, and where he goes from there, who knows?
Can you explain to me, like I'm a five-year-old, what is going to happen with the Clive Palmers of the world in reference to preferential voting? Are they involved in this?
Well, they will have candidates running, and they'll be asking people to vote number one for them. And if they have someone handing out at the polling booth, which is unlikely, they'll have a how-to-vote card. I've got no idea what that how-to-vote card will say. But the thing about preferential voting is that every voter can make up their own mind. If it's your decision to go number one, One Nation, two for Liberal, three for Labor, four for Greens, five for Palmer, or any other order of the major five options that you've got.
Yes.
That's your choice in the polling booth, a secret ballot. People can make up their own mind. They can take the how-to-vote card out the front of the polling booth and follow it if they wish, or they can do their own thing. And that's the system we've always had, and I dare say we'll always have in the future.
The majority of people just continue to, you know, because it's the easy way to go, they take the piece of paper from the people out the front, and when they get into the booth, they look at the one they want and they vote the way that they've been told to vote. Is that correct, you would suggest?
Well, it's declined over the years, Brent. When I first handed out at a federal election, which was probably 1980, so long ago there in the seat of Werriwa, probably about 90% of people took a how-to-vote as they went into the polling booth. That's down to about 50% now.
Okay.
A lot of people, it's one of the, you know, as you stand there handing out, even with the other side, we do talk a fair bit about why the proportion has dropped so much to just half. One of the reasons is that's put, obviously, is disillusionment with politics. People just want to make up their own mind and don't even want to take the how-to-vote card. And the other one is that maybe they've got the how to vote card on their phone. You know, most people have got the phones these days. The major parties send out the how to vote as a text message. So a lot of people have got it on their phone. You also get some people coming through who don't want to take the piece of paper for environmental reasons. So it's down to half, and handing out on the day is not anywhere near as effective as it used to be.
Okay, let's talk about the campaign of Anthony Albanese this week. He certainly hasn't had a good week.
No, he made a major error on Monday. It's hard to believe someone could be the Prime Minister of the country and not know the unemployment rate and not know the Reserve Bank cash rate that drives mortgage interest rates and business interest rates. So that seemed to be a huge detachment from economic interest. You know, Albanese just didn't seem to be interested in the economic debate. And how can you run the economy if you don't know the unemployment rate? So that was a bad one. And today he's dropped another clanger, saying that Labor sees no need for offshore detention to stop the people smugglers and the illegal immigration. He said they'd turn around boats, but that means no need for offshore detention. But, Brent, it raises an obvious point. And after 26 years in the Parliament, if Albanese hasn't thought of this, it's truly amazing. If you try to turn around the boat and the host country, be it Indonesia or Sri Lanka, doesn't want to take the boat back, where do you take them? Where do you send them?
True.
If you bring them on shore to Australian sovereign land, they can apply for immigration rights. So you need the offshore detention. If the host country won't take the boat back once it's been turned around, you need to take them to a Manus Island or a Nauru so they won't end up permanent residents of Australia.
And when he made that announcement this morning, we know that, as of, I think it was maybe 2 days ago, Christina Keneally is now isolating because she's come down with COVID-19. She, listening this morning over her Vegemite and toast, when she heard that, she must have nearly choked on the Vegemite and toast.
Well, Labor's always been soft on the people smuggler, soft on illegal immigration. Albanese, when I was in the Parliament, was dead set against the turnbacks, dead set against the offshore detention. His policy was open borders, bring them all in as a humanitarian act. And he was part of the Rudd and Gillard government where 2,000 of the asylum seekers drowned at sea as these leaky boats sank. So he has been part of a policy that was disastrous since in the past. And Keneally, much the same. She's never had a hard line on border protection. So today was ignorant at one level, but also very soft at another. Because if you can't send the boat back to Indonesia or Sri Lanka, Albanese sounds like he'll bring them onto Australian soil and give them immigration rights.
Today, I think it was this morning, was it not? Albanese's mind has said he wouldn't be taking any questions or holding a press conference. So the press pack arced up. He said he would do it, but it only lasted about 6 minutes because it seems as though the questions the press were asking Albo were all too difficult for him to answer.
Well, after he didn't know the unemployment rate and the cash rate, yesterday at the press conference, contrary to his promise to take every single question, yeah, he scurried out after about 7 or 8 questions. He did a lot more today, including that clanger on people smuggling and boat turnbacks. So, you know, whether you're taking a lot of questions or you're only taking a few, if you don't know your facts and you don't know your policy, you're going to end up with a train wreck of an election campaign. And 5 days into it, that's how Albanese looks. He looks incompetent. He looks hopeless. He looks like he's avoiding questions where he can, and he's not on top of his brief. I mean, the thing about Anthony Albanese, he had a pretty easy run through COVID, not a lot of attention or focus on him. All the issues were about the virus. And then he got the focus onto Scott Morrison, all the Brittany Higgins and Alan Tudge business, you know, sexy, sexy business in Parliament House.
Yeah.
And put the focus onto Morrison's character. And now the focus has come on to Albanese, and he's falling apart.
Can I ask you, he was in Cessnock today, but he didn't go to a coal mine. What does that tell us in the Hunter?
Well, he needs to also answer some questions about his policy on climate change, because he's got this safeguard mechanism policy, which means that if you are one of the big carbon emitters, like a coal mine or Tomago or Orica, in the Hunter Valley, you have to pay the equivalent of a carbon tax. Joel Fitzgibbon, the departing member for Hunter, has said this safeguard mechanism where companies are forced to buy carbon credits, it's like a new carbon tax. And some of the imposts are enormous. It's $10 to $20 million a year for the average coal mine in the Hunter Valley. And Tomago Aluminium Smelter, it's the equivalent of $44 million a year. So Albanese has a heavy impost on these companies that, under the safeguard mechanism, emit more than a certain amount of carbon dioxide equivalent each year. It's about 100,000 tonnes. So if you're a big emitter, you're going to be a job loser, a job shedder under Albanese's policies. And I suppose that's why he hasn't gone to a coal mine, because his policy is to effectively close them down and make the workers unemployed.
What do you think are some of the overrated issues that have been talked about this week by the two leaders?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. These election campaigns have changed over the years. They always used to be about the four or five big issues. The economy, national security, health, education. But now, because of social media and the media cycle being so rapid, you know, there's a new issue every 10 minutes, I think they start to focus on things that just aren't mainstream issues for people in the suburbs and regions of Australia. And I think the leading one is this federal ICAC. You know, the media want to bang on about it, but the need for it is not clear. It's very expensive. There's criticism of the New South Wales ICAC. So that's one issue, I think, that tends to bob up, that is nowhere near as important as how you run the economy, how you deal with China, how you get a better education system in place for our children. So, yeah, I wish the campaign would get away from personalities and get away from fringe issues and just stick to the big ones that really matter to the voters.
Do you know, I think that most people, certainly that listen to this program, feel exactly the same way as what you just said. They're sick and tired of playing the man, and they really want to hear what each party has as a plan to take us forward over the next 4 years to better us here as Australians. But we keep getting, you know, the politicians playing each other. One makes a mistake and the other one tries to get as much mileage out of that mistake as they possibly can.
Well, mistakes matter. If you don't know the unemployment rate and you haven't got a good border protection policy, you're not going to be much of a government, are you? So they are policy issues in one sense. But I think the problem really has been that Albanese's tactic was to put all the focus on Scott Morrison's character. And Morrison has made mistakes. He's not a love figure. The vaccine rollout was mishandled. You know, the whole business about going to Hawaii during the bushfires. But Albanese tried to make it a character and personality test, while he himself had a small target strategy, not to reveal much policy. And in that environment, it has been all about personalities, whereas I think Morrison would be well advised to put out a lot of policy and to say to the Australian people, look, you know, political personalities come and go, but here's the substance, here's the guts of what we can do for you and your family to make your life better. And I think the party that does that over the next 5 weeks is going to win.
We're talking to Mark Latham, leader of One Nation in New South Wales. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you briefly about Scott Morrison and his election campaign. But we'll take a break now and we'll continue our conversation shortly.